Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. My name is Mark Cook. Wait.
No, you're not Mark Cook.
I'm not Mark Cook. I nailed that intro, didn't
you? You did.
That was like good. Word for word.
That was good.
Like Mark does.
Yep.
See, he does it so many times. I know how to impersonate him. I am Trevor Sikkema, a.k.a. the man bun himself. With me is Mr. Scott Reynolds. Scott.
Hello. Missing in action today, Mark Cook.
Yeah, Mark is not with us today. You know, it's the weird schedule.
Thank God that he's not here.
We still let Uncle Stan hang around.
Stan, come on.
We still let him hang around. We just don't let him, you know, get close to the mics.
Yeah, he's not allowed to be anywhere near the mics anymore. That's for sure.
Odd schedule this week, you know, with the Monday night game. So yes. That's, you know, we'll excuse Mark's absence on the podcast for that.
Yes.
Perhaps he thought that it was Thursday and not Friday.
He's dealing with a medical issue. And
we're going to have to put him on IR?
Well, no.
Is he going to be a Gerald McCoy situation?
I think
we don't know.
Questionable for Monday.
Okay.
So we'll put him as questionable on the injury report.
Okay. So, odd week this week because the Buccaneers are playing on Monday night primetime television instead of their normal Sunday at 1 p.m. because they're not a very good football team.
A rare Monday night home game for the Buccaneers.
So, but there's a lot going on with this Monday night game. Not only is it on primetime, not only is it a division opponent, but Mr. Johnny Gruden will be in the house. They will be putting his name up in the rafters. It's going in the corner next to Glazer, right?
I think it is, yeah.
We think, because there's one little space.
Right in between John Lynch and Malcolm Glazer.
I think you got to think that that's where Gruden's name is going to go. They're going to do that at halftime. He's still going to be doing the color
broadcast
for the game, right? Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on there. And Scott, you had a very interesting Fab Five that came out today. Today, when we're recording this podcast, this is Friday. And this was, you know, I got to say, so this is my first year, obviously, being with Pewter Report.
Yeah.
It's different when I read your Fab Fives in the past as somebody who is not affiliated with Pewter Report.
Yeah.
Obviously, everything's pretty new to me. Whenever I see it, I'm reading it for the first time, everything like that. But since I get to work with you now, a lot of the ideas that you have, you know, we'll bounce stuff back and forth.
Yeah.
And some of it's still new to me, but most of the concepts I kind of already know. I read this Fab Five, and not saying it just because I want the people listening to this to go read it because I'm an employee of PewterReport.com, but this was fun.
I appreciate
this Fab Five that you had was really fun.
I'm not going to tell Mark, but you're going to get a higher Christmas bonus because of your praise. So I appreciate that very much.
As we have a little we have a little joke with some of the members of, you know, draft Twitter that we have. You know, we're all kind of buddies, guys who talk about the draft. And anytime we shout out somebody else or link somebody else's content, we're always just like, check is in the mail, you know, just just for that. And so that's kind of what we got going on here. No, but it was great because we've been talking about Gruden for a long time.
Yeah.
And really since we broke that piece this summer.
Mm-hmm.
But this Fab Five, you talk to some other people about John Gruden, guys who, you know, let's say know him a lot better than we could ever know him.
Definitely. Guys that won Super Bowls with him. And I was able to get Warren Sapp. He's been a good friend to PewterReport.com.
Always a good story when it involves Warren Sapp.
Yeah. And in this instance, we were talking about John, and I posed the question. And if you haven't read the Fab Five yet, go do it. But I'll steal one of the moments from that. And you've heard Mark Cook talk about this probably on more than one Pewter Nation podcast about Warren Sapp's trademark phrase of "if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, every day would be Christmas." So, and that's true. I mean, Warren Sapp, if you start a question with the word "if," he will throw that out there. And so, of course, I commit the cardinal sin talking to him on the phone the other day about John.
Did you open up with an "if"?
I did. I said, so if John were to come back to coaching next year, and let's say he were to come back and coach the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as has been rumored about, and he says, "Whoa, Scott, if ifs and buts," and I'm like, "I knew it! I knew it! I knew you were going to say that. I just want $1 million in my head." And I said, the minute that phrase was uttered from my mouth and the word "if" was a part of it, I was like, "Damn it! I know exactly what he's going to say."
That's good. That's good. That's good training for like journalism stuff. You know,
because
we also start a lot of our things with talk about.
Yes.
You know, when I was at the University of Florida, me and a couple of the journalists there, we always had a joke. Anytime you just said talk about,
right,
you'd get a glare from somebody. Or
yes,
they'd say, so in our head, in the back of our head,
yes,
we
want you to
formulated,
talk about
this. Right, but like we kind of like formulated our questions a little bit different. Yeah. We didn't give, you know, I don't want to say it's lazy because I mean we do. We want them to talk about it, right? So I don't want to say it's lazy, but sometimes when you have those little things like what Sab has here,
yeah,
it makes us a little bit better journalists. We ask a little bit better questions. Sure. So anyways, that's probably good on Warren Sapp.
So I rephrase that with the word should.
There you go.
And he doesn't have like a little clever remark for that. So I pinned him in a corner.
No rhyme or reason.
No
for
rhyme
that
or reason for that. So he gave me the goods on that. And he's always been a Gruden loyalist and a Gruden supporter. And vice versa. John has always appreciated Warren Sapp because Sapp is a guy that truly loves football. And he was the fire starter at practice. You've seen it now, especially this kind of being the tail end of your rookie season. You see the practice tempo, and it's just different, Trevor, isn't it, in November and December than it is in September
because these
guys are banged up. It's a long season. Florida's still hot this time of year. And these are the dog days of football, and especially when you're mathematically out of it, and the Buccaneers have only been mathematically out of it for a quick minute. But this team has been below 500 for a couple of months now. And when you're in the dog days, it's so hard to get up for practice. It's one thing to get up for the games, right? That's on TV.
Sure.
You're getting your game check, all that stuff. But, you know, here it is, another Wednesday practice, another Thursday practice. Sapp was the fire starter that it didn't matter if it was September 7th or December 7th, whether the Bucs were in it or out of it. He was a guy that loved to practice and demanded that you liked it too. And that's exactly the type of way that John Gruden ran this organization. It was always about getting better. It was always about challenging you at practice on the offense and defensive side of the ball. And so Sapp was a go-to guy. I also got Brad Johnson on the phone. And Brad was fantastic. He told me about a couple of the plays that John ran.
Mm-hmm.
He told me a very interesting exchange about when when Brad went to John with a play, trips right, 72 Trojan,
mm-hmm.
which he went to John and said, listen, man, I'm almost 100% with this play. And every time we run it, everywhere I've been, it's worked. And John incorporated it into the Bucs playbook. And I think he was 40 out of 41 in terms of completions with this play.
Wow.
And so not only did Brad tell me all this stuff, he went the extra mile and drew the plays up and sent them to me via text. And I incorporated those into the Fab Five. So Brad Johnson was great. Got some perspective from some of the guys that played a little bit later with John. Booger McFarlane and Anthony Beck, both those guys worked for ESPN along with John. And they were kind of talking about the darker side of John, where John lacked some people skills mm-hmm. the first go-around. And that was evident. He had his favorites, and he had guys that were, you know, on his you-know-what list in the doghouse, whether it was a Chris Sims, whether it was, you know, Mike Allstott and him not seeing eye to eye on touches, same with Keyshawn Johnson. You know, there were some guys that John disenchanted, and that was part of his tenure. This all wasn't rosy. It wasn't all Super Bowls and playoff games. There were some down years, too.
Don't you have to have that, though? Like, don't you? I know there's always two sides to something, and you can argue, you know, one person will think, hey, maybe he should have been a little bit better about, you know, treating guys or giving guys second chances, maybe not putting him in that doghouse so quick, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, the edge that has you do stuff like that is the same edge that makes you get up at 3:30 a.m. and watch the tape like he does, right? It's the same edge that makes you have 2 days out in Orlando when they used to have that and the beating sun and all that stuff. And it's so I think about that when I read the people person thing.
You're right. And one of John Gruden's trademark phrases is, and he would say we, meaning the Buccaneers, mm-hmm. but it was also really about him.
Mm-hmm.
We don't feel pressure. We apply pressure.
Sure.
Okay. That's how he coached. And that was his style, whether it was on game days or whether it was at practice, whether it was at a mini camp or a walkthrough, an OTA, that was his mentality. And that rubs people the wrong way. So let's transition a little bit from that friction point that the Keyshawns and the Chris Sims and all those guys had with Gruden during his timeline with Tampa Bay into what happened today at the podium with the present-day Buccaneers, because we saw Todd Monken, offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach, come out unprompted, and really, I thought, gave some appropriate perspective to the Jameis Winston, dirt cutter, alleged feud, friction, disgruntlement, whatever you want to call it. But that was pretty interesting exchange.
Yeah, so you know, for the people that didn't get to watch the Buccaneers broadcast or haven't seen any of the videos that we post on Twitter, we also have them up on PeterReport.com. I put them up there after the press conference. What Todd Monken did is he walked in the room and you know, kind of what we thought was going to happen, just like the last 6 weeks. You know, he sits there, he answers the questions. We ask him, hey, this football team is bad. Why is it bad? Oh, well, it's this, you know, it's that. It's not this guy. It's just, you know, it's an everybody thing. We're not doing it well. If we knew what it was, we'd fix it. It, like, same answers all the time, 6 weeks. So,
but at the same time, Monken is pretty forthcoming.
He is. He's been the most forthcoming out of everybody. I think he has been the most honest. And so today, he gets up there, and right before anybody asks a question, he goes, you know what? Let me just start by saying something. And anytime anybody does that, you better get your dang camera out.
Yes.
And you better just start hitting record as fast as you can because you know there's a good chance that that's the most real thing that you're going to get out of it today.
Yeah.
Now, in fact, Monken's entire press conference was very real. So it even bled over into some other questions, which is great. But he just started off by saying basically, hey, you know, there have been media reports that there is friction or a rift or strain, whatever you want to call it, between the relationship of Jameis Winston and Dirk Koetter.
Yeah.
And I've been on a couple of podcasts since that has come out, and I've talked about it, and people ask me, they're like, you know, you're on the other side of things. You talk to people that we can't. How true is this? And, you know, and my answer kind of starts the same way that Todd started a little bit. They're 4-9.
Yeah.
If they were 9-4, they would probably be having the same arguments out there on the field.
Sure.
But it wouldn't matter.
Exactly.
You know, you wouldn't be talking about it all the time. You know, Jameis Winston, it is natural for him to talk to his family, his friends, whatever. He's a human being, okay?
That's right.
When you're frustrated, and this is another point that Todd Monken made, if you didn't care, you wouldn't hear about this.
Exactly.
They care. And that's why there is. Guess what? There is this rift. And it won, I think it 100% exists.
Well, and the interesting thing is, if you go back and look, Keyshawn Johnson and John Gruden did not see eye to eye at all during their relationship, right? But Keyshawn Johnson was a 1,000-yard receiver in 2002, which was Gruden's first year, and they won a Super Bowl. And the only reason why that rift, that tension was not magnified is because they were winning. And they won the entire season. They were 12-4, Trevor. They didn't. It wasn't like they snuck in the playoffs. They won the division,
right?
And you know they had everything but home field advantage because the Eagles also had, I think, a 12-4 record. But they had the tiebreaker because they beat him during the regular season. So, having said that, we saw what happened the next year in 2003 when Keyshawn Johnson blows up. He gets suspended from the team. Ultimately, he's gone. That was a big deal. But not much had changed between 2002 and 2003 other than the fact that the Bucs were underachieving. All those players were still, you know, looking up and seeing confetti rain down. Everybody thought that they were the reason why they won the Super Bowl. It was classic Super Bowl hangover, and it happened here in Tampa Bay, and they were 7-9 as a result. And also Keenan McCardell was having a better year statistically, and Keyshawn didn't really like it. And so, but again, the point is there wasn't much difference between the relationship between John and Keyshawn in 2002 than it was in 2003, other than the record. And I think that's what you're seeing now. And hey, Jimbo Fisher, as Jameis Winston pointed out today, Jimbo Fisher would get in Jameis's face on live national TV, right in his grill, as Jameis said, and they would go at it. And Dirk's a little bit more laid back than that, but I believe it too. I believe that there is some issues, but I also believe what Monken said too, which is this is kind of normal.
Oh yeah.
The only thing that's different
is
the word strain. And where do you get strain? When you're losing.
Yeah.
That's where everything gets strained.
Yeah. No, I totally think that this is a normal thing, but I also, again, like, I think it exists. And what it comes down to, what makes this different than any other coach and quarterback relationship is obviously that this one is not working in the win-loss column. So the riff then becomes, the narrative then becomes, okay, well, can it be salvaged? You know what I'm saying? Like, if there is a disagreement because things aren't going well, that's one thing. But if you believe in both men, that's okay. Like Monken said, like, this is every coach that's ever coached a player.
Right.
You're literally there to tell them what they're not doing right so they can do it right.
Who has the power, Trevor? Jameis Winston being the number one overall draft pick in 2015, somebody this franchise has $25 million worth of guaranteed money in, or their second-year head coach? If you're Joe Glazier...
Well, when you set it up like that...
If you're Joe Glazier, who's got the power?
Jameis Winston.
Okay, no Jameis Winston, right?
No question.
He is the franchise.
Yes.
You made that decision when you drafted him first overall, and he plays the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Most important position on the field.
Yeah.
So if one of those guys is going to be believed, if one of those guys, you know, is going to go, the guy that's going to be believed is probably going to be Winston.
Right.
The guy that's going to go is end up going to be Dirk Cutter.
Right.
When it's all said and done.
Right. And there's a lot of evidence to Cutter possibly plateauing as a head coach and play caller when he gets to different teams.
And I think Jameis Winston has plateaued as a quarterback. I don't 100%. See.
Yeah.
And people say, well, he's regressed. I don't think he's regressed at all.
Yeah.
I just think he's plateaued.
Yeah. He needs somebody.
He needs a different voice.
He does. He does.
He needs somebody someone different. To take him to
and
the
which
next
is
level.
The interesting thing because, you know, when everybody talks about this, they're like, well, they signed Cutter as a head coach because they wanted to keep the continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great in theory. But it didn't work.
Right.
That's all you have to do. You just look at it and you just go, hey, it didn't work.
Well, and if you listen to what Cutter has said over the last 2 years, since he's been the head coach, he's spent less time in the quarterback meeting room. He's got to be the head coach, and that's fine.
Right.
That's how he runs, you know, his ship. He's not been nearly as hands-on as he was in 2014, or 2015, which was Jameis' rookie season.
Right.
When he threw for 4,000 yards as a rookie and went to the Pro Bowl, albeit due to several quarterbacks being injured. But I don't know that we've seen a whole bunch of improvement, aside from a couple percentage points in his completion percentage, since then. And I attribute that more so than anything to just, you know, having 2.5 years worth of games under his belt, more so than any real specific coaching. And I'm not knocking Mike Bajakian or Dirk Cutter. I'm not saying they haven't done anything to help Jameis. I'm just saying that I think that Winston's experience on the field has probably been just as big a benefactor as what he's gotten from Bajakian and Cutter. And I think that he needs, at this point, someone to take him to the next level.
Yeah, and this isn't always the case, but I'm just kind of, you know, in my head when you said that I was running through it, and it's kind of like, let's say, like weightlifting or like strength training, right? Mm-hmm. You could have a guy who, you know, you're just starting out weightlifting and training, and he's good. He knows what he's talking about, and he gets you to new strength that you didn't have before. But there is always going to come a point where if you are doing the same program that he might have had you do over and over again,
you're going to plateau. Yeah.
And when you break through to that next level of strength or what you want to look like or whatever, it's when you switch it up.
Right.
When somebody else gets in your ear, teaches you something a little bit different, gives you a little bit different perspective.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, that's just an analogy that I have for this situation. Other quarterbacks and certain head coaches have been able to get over that and have a ton of longevity. But
Drew Brees, Sean Payton,
but like, who knows? Perhaps Sean Payton, during his time there, learned something new himself. So he, as a teacher, became a different, almost like a different teacher.
Right.
And I wonder if that's happening with Cutter and Winston, because, like you said, we are looking at Winston right now, and he has plateaued.
Yeah.
He should be different in year three. And I know the injury timing is a little bit different. I went back and looked at some of the
numbers. It certainly didn't help him, right?
It didn't
help him get to the next
level. The number one picks that I've looked at over the past couple of years that I did in one of my cover threes, where Jameis is kind of in between a couple of these guys, normally their injuries happened in year two,
right?
Or something happened in year two. Mm-hmm. It's just different for Winston. It's hard to judge it because his happened in year three, which should have been the year. So, but again, you wonder, you never want to waste time, right?
Yeah.
Wasting time. I mean, time is money. I mean, that's the principle of it. So nobody, the head coach, the GM, the owner, certainly, nobody ever wants to waste time about something. And so if you don't think that you have the guy, or if you think that, maybe Jameis needs a new voice, year four of Jameis is when you do it.
Yeah.
You don't keep the same voice that you've had that you think that he's plateaued. And that's all the evidence that I think there are pros and cons about Dirk Cutter staying. But
I
think the cons are unfortunately stacking up against him, even in a timing perspective.
The other thing, and I think you mentioned this a couple of weeks back, when you look at last year and right when Raheem Morris got that 2010 team to 10-6. And it was a smoke and mirrors record because four of those wins came against four of the worst teams in the NFL that year, the Bengals, the Browns, the Cardinals, and the Rams, in the fourth quarter and then sometimes in the last minute. So the Buccaneers, who weren't really that much better than those teams, beat those four teams, and that's the difference between 6-10 and 10-6, right? Those four wins. And you look back at last year, and I want to say it was you, because I don't think Mark would say something this insightful and intelligent.
Taking shots while he's injured.
Well,
man.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, hey, I listened to the podcast when I wasn't here. So, yeah, shots fired. But Keith Tandy, right? If he doesn't make those interceptions in those games, that's a different outcome.
It's a different season.
It's a different season. Right. And we're not talking 9-7, right? I mean, we're talking about two interceptions against the Carolina Panthers in a 17-16 win at home to end the season. Mm-hmm. We're talking about on a potential New Orleans go-ahead touchdown drive.
Yeah.
He gets a pick against Drew Brees.
Yeah.
He gets the game-sealing interception in San Diego.
Yeah.
Right? Those four interceptions for those three games, that's 9-7 or that's 6-10 right there. And it all comes down to those plays.
Right, right. I mean, that's what Gruden was talking about a couple weeks ago when he said, hey, they're a couple plays away from 8-4.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff he was referencing.
Sure.
I don't know if that stuff exists this year necessarily, but last year, certainly.
I think with the kicker situation,
well,
too.
Well, yeah.
That's just how it is.
I think you're talking at least two games, right? With the
certainly
kickers,
the Patriots game. Nick Folk missed those kicks.
Good Lord, yeah.
And maybe it's a different narrative, but at the same time, though, I think looking back now, I'm not going to say that 9-7 record last year was as smoke and mirrors as Raheem's 10-6, but certainly
it had a little smoke.
It had a little smoke.
There's some mirrors.
Because right now you're looking at a four-win team, and
Keith,
what happened?
Keith Tandy was the magician.
Yeah, and what happened after Raheem's 10-6?
Yeah.
They were 4-12.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the Buccaneers are going to end up this year.
If their record's exactly the same, other than one game, Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
If let's just say that like even like everything plays out the way that it is, whatever, just Nick Folk makes a couple of the kicks, they win that game.
Yeah.
Even him getting cut, Patrick Murray still, everything else, keep it intact, but they win that Patriots game. Is this narrative any different?
No, because then you're at five wins.
I think so, too.
You know, so I really think...
And that, I think that they would still finish December really poor.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I think
totally.
That they're going to.
And I think they're going to,
but
too.
I just had to ask the question because I know people...
That
was a focal point of the year.
Right.
You know, it was a big,
I think the Buccaneers will have a good showing for a while, at least against the Falcons on Monday night. It's a home game. You know, it's Monday Night Football. They're going to be psyched to play and amped up.
Yeah.
I think Julio's going to end up doing his thing, unfortunately. Matt Ryan's going to do his thing. The Atlanta defense is going to come alive a little bit. And I think the Buccaneers, this is going to be their best performance, in my opinion, out of the next three games. I don't see this team having much motivation at all going to play the Carolina Panthers on Christmas Eve in Carolina against a team that is still jockeying for playoff position, right? They need a win.
I'm going to be there, and I'm going to wear an ugly Christmas sweater and a Christmas hat in the press box. Can I do that? Will they
yes,
let me do
you
that?
Can.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to do that. I'll send you guys a picture when I'm
please.
There.
Please. And post it up on Twitter.
Oh, 100%.
And then that New Orleans Saints team, they could be playing for home field advantage, right?
Yeah.
When it's all said and done.
Yeah.
And here you're going to have the Buccaneers and, hey, listen, Buccaneer fans, you've seen, week 17, you've seen the Buccaneers mail it in plenty of times. I'm not saying that's going to happen. Don't be surprised if it does. But the interesting thing is, and I wrote about this in the Fab, and if John Gruden, and the reason why we've written a lot about John Gruden is obviously this week he's going to be inducted into the Bucs Ring of Honor. That's what comprised a lot of this SR's Fab 5.
Uh-huh.
But we've been hearing things, rumors, if you will, that we've been piecing together. I don't believe there's any done deal. I don't think that he has... any agreement in place to become the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It would not surprise Trevor or I or Mark if John Gruden does become the next head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, though. There is interest on both sides, I believe, and I'll leave it at that. One interesting thing about John, one of the very first times that I got a chance to meet him was in 2002. He did kind of an off-the-record media gaggle with the beat writers. And there was, and the columnists were there from the Times and Tribune, and the beat writers were there. I was there. I think Jim Flynn was there from the old Pewter Report magazine. That was the first year we called it Pewter Report. It had been Buccaneer Magazine before that. Here's a funny little story for you. So this was just like right across the street from the old One Buccaneer place. There was a sports bar called Champs at International Plaza, and we met there around 4:30, and. We all were drinking some beer, and John is fond of beer, and John was getting a little bit more animated as the beers were going down and the time was ticking. And so he went around the room and kind of unprompted asked all of us or challenged us, questioned us, looked us in the eye with that Chucky face, and he would say something to the effect of, "Hey, Scott, who do you think the best wide receiver in Tampa Bay history is, huh? Hey, Rick Stroud, who's the best quarterback in Buccaneer history?" You know, and he would kind of throw those things out there and put you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here I'm racking my brain. And, you know, do I go with the guys that were just products of the Vinny Testaverde offense? You know, guys like, I'm drawing a blank now who they are. Mark Carrier, you know, guys like that.
Football didn't exist before 1991, so I don't know.
For you, yeah exactly. So. And so, you know, I could have gone that direction. I probably should have said Mark Carrier because he was a damn good receiver here and also in Carolina in other stops. But, you know, I kind of said, you know, Keyshawn Johnson wasn't bad. You know, he's not a bad receiver. And Keyshawn had just come off of, a franchise record, 101 catches or 110 catches, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
He was the only weapon that they had in 2001. And Gruden didn't like Keyshawn really from the beginning. And he said something to the effect of, you know, if you want a 40-yard catch from Keyshawn Johnson, let him run 40 yards and throw him the ball. In other words, you're not going to get much yards after the catch with Keyshawn Johnson.
Okay.
He was not exactly fleet of foot. So, and he called Keyshawn Keystone because of his penchant for not being sure-handed. And so he was getting like a little carried away. And so we were kind of wrapping up. And, you know, we all had a good time getting to know John and seeing this different side of
sure.
John than,
yeah.
than what you would see on a podium. And so I go to use the restroom, and John Gruden is right behind me, and went up to one of the urinals, and there's like this little partition. It's not like a full wall,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like a little partition, maybe about 6 to 8 inches wide, so you have some privacy, okay?
Sure.
But it doesn't go all the way to the floor. It doesn't go all the way up to the ceiling either, so you can kind of see who's next to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I pull up to one urinal to the left, and John Gruden's is to my right, and he pulls up in the urinal beside me. He just looks at me and he says, "Keyshawn Johnson, huh? Huh? Really? You think so?" And he starts going into me, you know, into Chucky mode a little bit. First time I saw Chucky. And as he is doing his business and I'm doing my business, he's turning to look at me. Okay? And as he's turning, you know, he's not quite hitting the urinal anymore. And he actually ends up pissing on my right foot as he's talking. Now, this is the new head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm still a little young in my career, right? And this is Chucky with a couple beers in him.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
You know, and again, he didn't mean to. He's simply just turning to look at me. And as he turned, he's turning his whole body, not just his head. And
he was getting into it.
He was getting into it. That was a conversation he wanted to continue. And you know, all I could do was just like look down and say, "Oh, John Gruden's pissing on my right foot." Okay, you know, and it's funny to look back at it. It was actually funny when it happened because it's one of those moments.
Have you ever told him that story?
No, I'm not sure he listens to the podcast.
Well, either, so I mean, if he listens to the podcast, and he's going to hear about it. Next time you're going to see him, he's going to give you the look.
Oh yeah, I've gotten the look before.
And he's
going to
bring it up. So
another interesting story that was kind of funny involving John was you know, part of our job is to get some off the record information. That's just how you know, we do it. The Times does it. I mean, that's just kind of how you form narratives. You get information. I mean, look at Ian Rappaport, for example, right? He got that information from Winston's camp or within the Buccaneer organization somewhere about Dirk Cutter and Jameis Winston and their relationship, right? That's just kind of how it is. You get the off the record type stuff, and then you kind of put stuff out there, or it helps shape your perspective on what you're writing and whatnot. So right before the draft, this is back in 2005, John Gruden decided to have a sit down with myself and Jim Flynn. And this is, I think, in March, right before the draft. Free agency was still going on, although the Buccaneers had already kind of done this. So I want to say it was probably late March. They already signed some of the players they wanted to sign, some of the bigger names. And so John is trying to talk us into the fact that the Bucks are going to take Cadillac Williams. I did not want Cadillac Williams at all. My birthday was April 23rd. When this franchise drafted Cadillac Williams on my birthday, I was freaking out going, thanks for the present. You've got the fifth overall pick, and you're going to draft the third running back in the draft. Ronnie Brown went, I think, first or second overall. You had Cedric Benson from Texas go to the Bears at number four. And then they took Cadillac Williams, who John fell in love with at the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I think partly because his name was Cadillac.
Right.
If he went by Carnell Williams, I don't know that he gets drafted, but it's Cadillac, man. I want to drive the Cadillac. I mean, that's kind of how John thought about personnel too. If there was a cool factor, it like scored an extra point on their grade, right?
That's how I do it with scouting. So
there you go. So John is trying to do this, and I'm trying to say, well, yeah, I know, but like Ronnie Brown, I think is the better running back. Yeah, but listen, man, like when they're giving the ball to one of those guys around the goal line, it's Cadillac getting the goal line carries. They're putting him in those situations. And I wanted offensively Mike Williams from USC, the big receiver, mm-hmm. which he was a bust anyways.
Yeah, that didn't work either. Yeah.
But the other guy I wanted was DeMarcus Ware from Troy, who I thought was a Simeon Rice-like kind
of
guy.
Never heard
of
him.
The guy they should have taken.
Never heard of
him. He went to
number 10. Total bust.
Yeah, to the Broncos.
Can't pick a guy from Troy.
Right.
He'll never pan out.
Yeah, or Dallas, whoever it was. So we're having this conversation, and John, in setting this up, he's like, hey, let's go somewhere kind of discreet. We're gonna kind of go there during the day. So John's idea of discreet was Champs across the street, right? Okay. Same sports bar. So
it's not really discreet.
No, it's not. But right. That's where John wanted to go. So we went there. We had a conversation for a bit. And so all of a sudden, right, and John kept using, hey, we got to keep this kind of low-key. I'm going to sneak out of the office. We're going to have this conversation. So John's back is to the door. And Jim and I are sitting there. We're talking to John about the draft and some of the draft prospects. And they had already been at the Senior Bowl coaching that year. And, you know, who do I see start walking through the door? Bruce Allen, general manager. It's just like, oh, crap. You know, it's one of those things. You've seen it in movies, right, where somebody's talking about somebody, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And the people that actually see the guy coming up from mm-hmm. behind are like, no, shh, this, right? So I was kind of freaking out. I looked at Jim, you know, like, oh, crap, here comes Bruce, you know. And so Bruce comes up behind John, reaches into John's pocket in his jacket, pulls out his phone, John's phone, and turns it on. And Bruce looks at John and says, John, these cell phones work better when you turn them on. And he put it down right there. And he says, I've been trying to call you. There's somebody we're thinking about signing, and I need you for a minute. Excuse me, guys. So Bruce pulls John away, you know. And it was just a funny exchange to see the general manager walk over and say, John, these work better when they're turned on. And he pulled John's cell phone out of his own pocket, you know. And John's like, oh, yeah. You know, but good times. It was fun. John's a very interesting guy.
Did Bruce Allen pee on your shoe or no?
Bruce Allen did not pee on my shoe.
Right.
No, he
just
did not.
Sure. Just making sure.
Yeah, yeah. John, I think's the only person that's urinated on my shoe.
Okay.
So,
but good.
Yeah, and listen, the thing is it doesn't make a difference to me whether John Gruden comes back to coach the Buccaneers or not. I know some people out there are thinking, gosh, you're pushing this narrative. You want this to happen. I really don't. I don't have any stake in this game.
People ask me about that, like on Twitter, when I was kind of like going at Dirk Cutter and all this and talking about a new coach and all this stuff, and they kind of like talked about the narrative like that, and I simply said to them, I don't enjoy watching bad football.
Yeah.
And I am going to be an advocate for whatever allows me to not watch bad football.
That's
anymore.
Fair.
That's it.
Totally agree.
That's it. Yes. Whether it's John Gruden, whether it's Bruce Arians, whether it's Todd Haley, whether it's Josh McDaniels,
whoever.
I don't
care. Agreed. Wholeheartedly.
I don't care.
If John Gruden does not come back to the NFL to coach again or coach the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm not going
to
lose any sleep. It's not going to matter to me.
I want to watch good football.
Right.
You guys out there want to watch good football.
Agreed. And that's what this
is
all about.
We're just trying to, Peter Report, journalists, whatever. Yep. We're just trying to.
We just happen to know some things by staying on top of the story from where it started in July that there's the framework here where this could happen. And ultimately, that's between John and Joel Glazer if it ever gets to that.
Very true. All right. So,
but here's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can put any bets on this. I don't know if mybookie.ag, if you can go there
if you have a place
and actually bet on this. But what you can do You can bet on this week's NFL action. You can bet on college bowl games, which start, I believe, tonight, right? Tomorrow night? Bowl season starting. It's like underway quickly.
I cannot remember. Does it start tonight?
I think
tonight?
It's tomorrow night. I think okay. It's tomorrow night. So I've already laid down at least $50 on college action.
Got to do right? it.
And I've already done that.
Got to do it.
Yeah, and I bet Kayla Benenock today on my Kansas State UCLA game, the Cactus Bowl this year. I lost that bet to Alteron Verner the last two times these teams played. It was in the Alamo Bowl.
Oh.
Yeah. It was close. They got a huge lead.
Redemption here.
And the Wildcats came back, and it wasn't enough. Paul Perkins had a breakaway touchdown run about 4 minutes left in the game to defeat Tyler Lockett and the Kansas State Wildcats, and I had to wear Alteron Verner's UCLA T-shirt and hat throughout the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hoping is to extract some revenge.
You made Mike Evans wear a K-State one last year, though.
I did, yes. And I'm hoping that Kayla Benenock will also be wearing some purple garb in a matter of weeks around the locker room. If not, I will be in Bruin blue and gold again. So I've got that bet out there. But I bet on that game. I bet on other games at mybookie.ag.
The New York Jets are playing the New Orleans Saints at home.
Yes.
This week.
Yep.
The Jets are getting 16 points.
Yeah, that's crazy.
16!
Yeah. But you know what, though? Listen, I put money on the Patriots going down to Miami. I think the spread was 7.
Yeah.
Right? And I lost that game. I lost because, A, the Dolphins won.
16?
You know? But, yeah, that's a huge point spread for the NFL.
That's so many points for the NFL.
Do you know
NFL?
That Lane Kiffin's Florida Atlantic team has a 22.5 point spread against the Akron Zips?
I'm surprised it's not more.
Well, yeah, but that's actually the highest point spread in a bowl game.
Really?
Yeah, huh. It is.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, week to week, you could probably get a little bit different ones. But anyways, yeah. So
mybookie.ag, throw some action down on those games. It's never too late to start. You can start right now. It doesn't matter the college football season is almost over or that the NFL season is winding down and getting into the playoffs. You didn't miss a thing. Go to mybookie.ag, mention the promo code Pewter, mention the Pewter Nation podcast on pewterreport.com, put in Pewter for the promo code. They're going to double your initial investment. So you put down a $100 deposit, Trev, how much you're going to get?
You're going to get $100 extra.
There you go, $200. If I put down $1,000, how much is mybookie.ag going to give me?
I'm going to get an extra $1,000.
An extra $1,000 to bet with, yeah. So it's really simple. I've had a lot of fun. I'm still up this year.
Wish that's how it worked at the roulette table tonight.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't play roulette.
I don't think Hard Rock's going to
sponsor me. I'm doing
me.
Better at mybookie.ag than I am in DraftKings or FanDuel this year.
So yeah, no, you are. You're killing
it. I really
it.
Am. It's fun. So I only bet $5 a game, sometimes $10. It's fun. I can't do it. I'm up $50.
Too much of an addict.
I know.
I'd get on it.
I'm too much of a wuss when it comes to betting. So, hey, listen, I got 4 kids and a wife, man. It's Christmas time.
Can't relate.
So, mybookie.ag, check it out. Never too late to jump on board. They got the fastest payouts in the business. And go have some fun.
All right. Well, this episode was longer than I thought
it
would
be. Did you miss Mark Cook at all today?
You know.
I didn't.
No comment.
I didn't do that.
No comment. All right, Mark will most likely be back with us on Monday. I almost said Sunday, so it'll be.
If he's not back, you can use me as a fill-in. I don't mind sharing some knowledge either.
Uncle Stan, you already had your mic time this year.
Yeah,
you really did.
Yeah, you kind of abused that, so there's no way you're going to get on there.
So Monday night, Bucks-Falcons. Probably not going to have one right after the game, correct? Because,
well, I mean, when you think
depends.
About it.
Depends.
We're looking at probably a 3 a.m. time for that podcast.
Right. So
probably not.
Probably
we'll do
not.
One Tuesday.
It'll probably be coming Tuesday morning, probably like late in the morning. That's when we'll have our next podcast up. But, if you haven't read the Fab Five this morning, go read it. It's a great read. We're going to have our predictions up on Sunday, I believe.
Yep.
Monday, we'll have plenty of things going on. Myself and Mark are actually going to be on. We're actually going to be on TV.
Yeah, WMOR. So that is the local Tampa Bay station here. They're going to do a pregame show talking about Bucks-Falcons with J.P. Peterson.
Yeah.
And then that will lead up to the game. You can watch the game on ESPN. If you don't have cable, you can watch it locally on WMOR here in Tampa.
So there you go. We will be on television if you feel like gracing your televisions with our presence, which totally understand
you
if you don't.
You can actually check out the man bun. You can check out
if
man
you've
bun's
never seen
man
it before.
Bun.
If you've never seen it before, you can tune in. And you will see it in all its glory. I'm getting a haircut today, so I'm not touching the top. Okay. Don't worry about it. Right. But I'm just saying, you know, it'll look slick. So yeah, it's going on Monday. Buccaneers Falcons Monday night, and we'll have plenty of coverage about it after the game. So until next time, for Mark, who's not here, Scott Reynolds, I'm Trevor Sikkema. This has been another edition of the Peter Nation Podcast.
Out.